Hello, and welcome to Ox Talk on Tuesday, the 30th of July 2024. My name is Bridget, and I'll be compiling this week's edition, in which you will hear a selection of news items from the local Oxford papers, chosen by Manny Woods and Diane Sada, and read by Rosemary Shaw Holt and Ralph Wares. Copying and distribution of the USBs is by Michelle Lawful. Before we start, here's some information on how to listen to Ox Talk on your Alexa device. At the end of the news, you can hear information on how to access Ox Talk online. Additionally, in case it's useful to you, the sunrise times this week will range from 5:24 on Monday 29th of July to 5:33 on Sunday 4th of August. And the sunset times this week will range from 8:59 on Monday 29th of July to 8:48 on Sunday 4th of August.
Notice to listeners of Ox Talk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to Ox Talk using Alexa. To listen to Ox Talk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to Ox Talk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to Ox Talk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Ox Talk and we will try to help.
A key bridge in Oxfordshire is set to undergo weeks of closure because of emergency repairs. The Madley Brook Bridge in Whitney requires urgent replacement, according to West Oxfordshire District Council. Work commenced on Monday, July the 29th, and the public has been warned about the closure, with alternative routes suggested by West Oxfordshire District Council. A spokesperson for the council said, "Notice for Madley Park pedestrians. Use the lane from Madley Park to Newland, opposite the Griffin Pub, as a detour. We apologise for any inconvenience while the work is undertaken." This follows the news that since Monday, July the 22nd, the Banbury Road B4100 to Bicester has been partially closed from the roundabout to Lodge Close. This will last until the end of October so that improvements on the Banbury Road roundabout can continue. Pedestrians have expressed concern about tables which have been placed on a pavement outside a city centre hotel. The Store Hotel opened in May on the corner of Broad Street and Corn Market in Oxford and has had positive reviews for its Treadwell restaurant and rooftop bar. Now, after receiving a pavement licence from the City Council, it has offered diners the option of sitting outside on tables, which take up some space on the pavement in Broad Street. The move has prompted debate in an online discussion group run by Oxford Pedestrians Association. Danny Yee said he was opposed to the seating on the pavement, which is close to a model of an ox, one of a large number throughout the city, which are part of family-friendly ox trail. Seating should not be allowed here. It needs to be either removed or relocated eastwards into the broader pedestrian event space, not on the footway. I estimate the gap between the lamppost and the support base for the fence around the seating as about 1.2 metres. This should not be acceptable anywhere, let alone on one of the busiest pedestrian routes in the city. If you watch this location for any length of time, you will see streams of pedestrians forced to descend the curb and go around the utility cabinet and the Ox Trail Ox. But this is not possible for wheelchairs or mobility scooters and creates a trip hazard for other users. Congestion here is also pushing pedestrians to the north, making conflicts in the cycle track worse. She said, "I think the potential issue is with tables on the street in general. Broad Street is narrow at this end, and there are both pedestrians and cyclists passing, in summer in very high numbers. However, we have found that the tables on Corn Market, which split the pedestrian space into two, feel more oppressive, and on St Michael Street, where the City Council have been careful to mark out lines over which tables and seating should not cross, there can be an issue for wheelchair users needing to pass and finding themselves obstructed. In Ox, PA, we believe that outdoor cafes, though generally a good thing, as they are accessible to all, need to be planned carefully in terms of the space left and how it needs to be used. I am very mindful that when we carried out a survey of how our members use Queen Street and Corn Market, several wheelchair users responded that they never go to the city centre, as getting there by wheelchair is impossible for them. This strikes me as unacceptable. The store has been asked to comment.
Three charities in Oxfordshire have been awarded a donation from the National Lottery Community Fund. The organisations Home Start Southern Oxfordshire, Home Start Oxford and Home Start Banbury, Bicester and Chipping Norton collectively received a sum total of £419,000. The funds will back Home Start's upcoming three-year initiative, Side by Side, Parents Supporting Parents, to create a better start for children. The programme will train volunteers to support families with young children dealing with difficulties such as mental health issues, multiple births, family breakdowns and isolation. It is designed to aid participants in managing their parental responsibilities more effectively and to help a child's learning and development. The past year has seen the three Home Start charities extend support to more than 900 families and over 1,200 children in Oxfordshire. The recent funding aims to bolster the workforce, increasing the number of volunteers and broadening the scale of the charity's reach across the county. The philosophy of Home Start stems from the belief that early support for parents of young children can have a lasting impact. By helping build skills, confidence and community networks, this early intervention ensures healthier relationships, child development and overall family well-being. Linda Chung, Home Start Southern Oxfordshire's scheme manager, said, "We're delighted with this funding success. Working in collaboration with the other two Home Starts in Oxfordshire means we can offer support to families worldwide and have a greater impact on families struggling during a child's crucial early years. We're very grateful to the National Lottery Community Fund for recognising and supporting our project over the next 3 years." Those interested in volunteering or seeking support from Home Start can visit www.homestartoxon.org.uk to learn more about local opportunities. That's www.homestartoxon.org.uk. The National Lottery Community Fund, fuelled by players, amasses over £30 million weekly for charitable causes across the UK. It began in 1994, and in that time, £47 billion has been raised. Over the past year, it has contributed in communities through the distribution of more than £500 million in life-changing funding. The three Home Start charities in Oxfordshire are dedicated to ensuring that every family receives the support they need, aiming to step in early and empower families to navigate their issues before their situation escalates to a point requiring serious intervention.
A new homeware store will open next month in Westgate Shopping Centre with a big giveaway planned for the grand opening. Sostrona Grene, a Danish homeware store, will open in Oxford on Friday, August the 9th at 10 a.m. As part of the grand opening, the shop will be giving away a large tufted rug, valued at over £60, and a goodie bag to the first 100 customers visiting the shop. During the event, customers can also enjoy refreshments and live performances from string musicians and ballet dancers. The brand new store will continue the brand's extensive rollout across the UK, with 100 stores expected to open by 2030 and 500 stores open globally by 2027. As part of the expansion across the south of England, the brand said the Westgate Centre is a key and high footfall retail destination to add to the increasing list of Sostrona Grena branches. Mikel Grena, chief executive and co-owner of Sostrona Grena, said, "We have very big plans for expanding our brand across the UK, and we are thrilled to be adding another location to our roster in the south of England. Oxford is an incredible student city, and with a leading shopping and leisure centre destination like Westgate, we have high hopes for the success of the new store. The store will feature weekly releases of trend-driven products, in addition to its staple homeware selection. Drawing inspiration from Scandinavian design, customers will have access to an extensive range of soft furnishings, kitchenware, furniture, gifts, hobby crafts, seasonal decorations, and children's toys, including mini home items." UK joint venture partners Norma Jacob and Richard Power, who run over 25 stores across Northern Ireland, Southern England and Scotland, said they are also looking forward to the opening. Ms. Jacob said, "We can't wait to bring Sostrona Grena to the world-renowned and historic city of Oxford. We expect the store to be popular with locals, students, and the many daily visitors that the city centre receives. Just in time for the return of university students later this year, we hope our affordable homewares and stationery will be popular with those starting the new semester." Mr. Power added, "Westgate Oxford has incredible footfall and couldn't be a more exciting location for our next store to launch. Surrounded by a host of other key retailers, we think our concept will bring something really exciting to the centre." Brendan Hattam, Centre Director at Westgate Oxford, comments, "We are thrilled to announce that Sostrona Grena have chosen Westgate Oxford as their first location within the region. We're sure that our guests will love the unique Nordic-inspired concept of the store and the brand's range of homeware, craft materials and lifestyle products will bring something totally new to the shopping centre's offering."
John Lewis has announced the launch of a new repair trial in partnership with Timpson Group. Customers will now be able to bring garments, accessories and a selection of homeware back to life through an in-store repair service. The Oxford store in Westgate is the first one to launch the trial out of the five selected stores, with Liverpool, Cheadle, Milton Keynes and Welwyn following throughout the week. The service will accept any brand, allowing customers to drop off items to be fixed, altered, cleaned or restored and come back to collect them after they have been given a fresh lease of life. John Lewis Commercial Director Catherine Mitchell said, "Our customers come to us for fashion and homeware that's well made and will last. And this just takes that mentality and service one step further. We want to help them extend the wear of their fashion items and have the option to bring these much-loved items back to life, whether they are hanging by a thread or just need a simple stitch or two." To launch the trial, John Lewis and Johnson's are offering forces to bring their expertise to this new offering to customers. Johnson's forms part of the Timpson Group, and the Johnson name has been synonymous with dry cleaning and laundry expertise for over 200 years. Will Langston, Managing Director at Timpson Direct, said, "We're really excited about working with John Lewis. Alterations have always been one of the core parts of our business, and we have been seeing this increase over the past few years. As more customers are conscious about the environment and are wanting to repair and bring back to life some of their well-loved garments and accessories. Our service is well established within the industry, and we have an excellent team of specialists who undertake all our work and take a real pride and passion in all that they do. John Lewis will learn what customers want during the 16-week trial, such as the type of services customers look for, the type of garments most repaired, and the demographics of customers seeking the repair service in a test and learn approach.
An Oxford restaurant has been named in the top 10 100 eateries in the UK by the Good Food Guide 2024. Restaurant review Bible, The Good Food Guide, has announced its annual 100 Best Local Restaurant list. The list aims to celebrate the best of British dining, with the awards highlighting independent restaurants from across the UK. One restaurant from Oxford was named in the prestigious list as an unprecedented 60,000 votes were cast. Pompette in South Parade in Summertown has been included in the prestigious list as a recognition of the owner's efforts. The French restaurant Charcuterie and Wine Bar is owned by Oxford Brookes alumni with French roots Pascal Weideman and his wife Laura. Pompette, named after the French word for tipsy, opened in late 2018 and started to garner impressive reviews after offering the residents of North Oxford something a little different. The restaurant replaced Portobello in Summertown South Parade and has a rotating menu, predominantly serving French cuisine. "Everything you see would be me and everything you eat would be Pascal," Laura told the Oxford Mail at the time of opening. "Everything has been chosen for a reason. My husband is a great advocate of seasonal produce and provenance. We have lots of local produce. We really thought about the daily rotating menu and everything we wanted from a restaurant."
A Polish Brownies and Cubs group made a trip to Didcot Railway Centre. On July the 14th, a group of youngsters of Polish descent living in Bristol visited the centre. They ventured on a tour for a scout badge by taking on the role of a railway person known as a kolchatsi. At the centre, they explored a traditional manual lever signal box and the modern Swindon panel, which replaced over 20 manual boxes in 1968. The panel, relocated to the centre in 2016, features computer simulations that visitors can control. The troupe also sampled travel in different carriages, from the rather primitive third-class carriage of 1841 to a more luxurious family saloon of 1894, which offered 17 seats around a table and a lavatory, something uncommon for trains of this era. The railway centre brings to life the heyday of the Great Western Railway. The Great Western Society has developed the site, which still retains many of the original Great Western buildings and features, as both a working steam locomotive and railway museum, engineering maintenance centre, and railway line offering short rides to visitors. It also features an original 1932 four-road engine shed.
Work starting at Oxford's Thornhill Park and Ride means parking spaces will be cut by half for 3 months. Resurfacing and drainage improvements began at the London Road site on Saturday, July the 27th, and are expected to finish on October the 1st. While the Park and Ride, located in the East Oxford area, is about 15 minutes from the city centre, it will remain operational. Its capacity, however, will decrease from 1,335 to approximately 600. Bus stops for services to the city centre and Oxford hospitals will be moved to the main car park to allow repairs at the existing bus turning circle. The main car park will not be open to parking, with the exception of the disabled parking bays. The terminal building with toilets, a coffee kiosk and a waiting area will remain open during this period. Electronic display boards around the city will provide updates, including queuing traffic announcements. The county's five other park and ride sites will be unaffected while the work is carried out at Thornhill. These are Bicester Park and Ride, which is near Bicester Shopping Village, Oxford Parkway Park and Ride, based north of Oxford, Seacourt Park and Ride, located to the west of Oxford, Redbridge Park and Ride in the south, and Pear Tree Park and Ride, which is also north of Oxford.
Oxford residents are being encouraged to consider hosting an international student as the new academic year approaches. Every year, thousands of overseas students come to the UK, many to attend independent schools in Oxford. During weekends and half-term breaks, these students often remain in the country, staying with host families in and around the city. These families play a significant role in the students' experiences, and with the new academic year fast approaching, there is a push to enlist host families in Oxford. Ideal families could include those with young children who might be keen to learn a new language, or those with older children who have already left home. Host families report a broadened global perspective and often stay closely connected with students and their families after they have left school. Kendall Yardley and her husband Anthony, who live in Oxford, have been hosting students for the company Pippa's Guardians for more than a decade. Ms. Yardley said, "I think it's great for so many reasons, not only for us as a host family, but also for the students staying with us. We both get to learn and understand different cultures and customs, try new food and make wonderful connections. And it's been lovely that when the students have moved on to the next stages in their lives, they've kept in touch and sent us updates on what they are doing."
Plans have been submitted to transform a long-standing Oxford car wash into a new development, which could also include a fast food restaurant and flats. Applicant Luan Krashi is requesting permission from the City Council to change the existing Universal Hand car wash building in Garsington Road in Cowley into a mixed-use development. This development would include a flexible commercial unit as well as two one-bed flats and possibly a fast food restaurant. It comes as the applicant says the car wash business, previously also used for valeting services, has been redundant for the last couple of years after a new 24-hour car wash business opened nearby. An applicant planning paper says the application site relates to an existing hand car wash business and single-storey building located at the front of Old Station Yard, accessed off the Watlington Road. The existing site is located within a mainly commercial and industrial context, with some residential dwellings or developments. The site measures approximately 100 square metres. The applicant planning paper says the existing site has been a long-standing car wash in the area. The proposed site is within a very sustainable location, with comparable or similar developments adjacent to the site. Although the wider site is mainly of industrial and commercial use, there has been a history of mixed-use schemes, including residential, and there are some long-standing and new residential properties adjacent or close to the site. The development is proposed as car-free with access spaces. Villagers in Wolvercote say they are saddened by the disappearance of a popular pub cat. For many years, black and white moggy Jack was a popular friend to drinkers at Jacob's Inn, which has now been renamed the Wolvercote. But according to one villager, Claire Martin, a relief manager at the pub, became concerned about hygiene and gave Jack to a customer, who then took him away. Miss Martin said the cat has an owner living in the area and is hoping it will return one day. Jacob's Inn closed in June last year after 10 years of trading and has since been renamed the Wolvercote. Two pygmy goats named after comedians Morecambe and Wise were based at Jacob's Inn and they have been rehomed. Miss Martin said nobody was more sad to see the Jacob's Inn staff go than Jack the cat, the local community cat who spent most days at the pub
and was one of their regulars, having lived in the village all his life. Miss Martin added, during the 10 years of Jacob's Inn's heyday, Jack the Cat was welcomed into the pub by landlords Johnny Pugsley and Damien Farrar. Jack wandered the pub gardens, checking on the goats and that all was well with the chickens and pigs. He very quickly became a favourite with both staff and customers alike, with his handsome good looks and calm, kind nature. Indeed, many people visited the pub just to sit with Jack and take photos. Very much a therapy cat in the truest sense of the word. She added, everyone in the village knows Jack, and amongst the villagers there has never been a bad word uttered about him. He is the sunshine on a cloudy day. The pup became the Woolcot, and Jack seemed content, just like Larry the cat in Downing Street, and all was well. Sadly, the new tenants moved on, and a relief manager looking after the pub stated that Jack, for hygiene reasons, was not welcome. Thinking him to be a stray, the relief manager gave Jack, on July the 1st, to an elderly man visiting the pub. Miss Martin said Jack is chipped and has an owner, and added that posters have been placed in the pubs, the local shops, and notice boards, all asking the same question, where is Jack? She said, it's now more than 3 weeks after the disappearance of Jack, and there seems no word from either the relief manager or the brewery with a description of the man who took Jack. Details from another source say that the man is 6 foot, in his 80s, with a quietly spoken voice, wears a leather jacket, and drives an older black four-door car. He is believed to live on a farm in Ensham and has other cats. 2 days after Jack was apparently taken to Ensham, a message appeared on Chiltern Cats Protection Facebook page. It said, missing. Have you seen Jack, a black and white cat missing from Wolvercote? He is a community cat and very much missed. Microchipped. Although out of our area, there is concern that he could have gone some distance in a vehicle, so could be anywhere. Please let us know of any sightings. PM or email welfare@chiltern.cats.co.uk. Staff at the pub have not yet commented.
Former Pakistani Prime Minister Imran Khan will reportedly run for Chancellor of Oxford University from his prison cell in Pakistan. The controversial politician and cricket star will attempt to enter despite serving a 10-year jail sentence. The seat of Chancellor of Oxford University is vacant following the resignation of 80-year-old Lord Paton, the former governor of Hong Kong and Tory party chairman, who held the post for 21 years. According to Oxford University, the role of Chancellor is the ceremonial head of the university, who is usually an eminent public figure elected for life, and presides over all major ceremonies. The process of electing a new Chancellor by members of the university's convocation, which is about 350,000 people, will be held online for the first time. Who is Imran Khan? Mr. Khan is currently in jail over allegations of stoking protests and violence against the Pakistan military on May the 9th last year. He has denied the charges. Mr. Khan studied economics and politics at Keble College, Oxford in 1972 and also captained the cricket team of Oxford University. He made a test debut for Pakistan in 1971. In 2005, Mr. Khan became the Chancellor of Bradford University. He served in the post until 2014. Imran Khan will contest for the Chancellor of Oxford University as there is a public demand that he should contest. Mr. Khan's advisor on international media, Syed Zulfi Bukhari, told The Telegraph. We will announce it publicly once we get a go-ahead from Khan and start the signature campaign for it, Mr. Bukhari said. Victory for Mr. Khan appears unlikely. Former Prime Ministers Sir Tony Blair and Boris Johnson are also among the candidates to become the university's Chancellor.
County Council leaders have confirmed that their proposed new traffic filter scheme has been postponed in Oxford. Earlier this month, Network Rail announced that Botley Road will not reopen as planned at the end of October. The major route into the city has been closed at the rail bridge since April 2023 as part of the £161 million redevelopment of Oxford Station. Initially, the road was supposed to open from October 2023 to March 2024, but delays forced Network Rail to rethink and announce the closure until October 2024. Now the Rail Authority has announced there will be further delays, although it has not said yet when the road will reopen, due to the complexity of diverting a large number of underground utility cables. The County Council was planning to launch 6 new traffic filters across the city on a trial basis in a bid to cut congestion, but it has now issued a statement to say this will not go ahead as planned in November. The Council said in a statement it was deeply dissatisfied and frustrated that the launch of its traffic filters trial planned for November is not now possible. It added, "The Council remains committed to the trial, which aims to tackle Oxford's chronic congestion problems and dramatically improve bus journey times. The only feasible option is for the Council to wait and run the trial after Network Rail completes its work. The Council is now waiting for Network Rail and the Department for Transport to confirm if work will continue and when it will be complete. Residents and businesses have shown incredible patience with more than a year of disruption to their lives because of Network Rail's project. While the road remains closed, the Council will continue to do all it can to work with partners to minimise the impact on the rest of the road network. The traffic filters with ANPR cameras aim to reduce traffic levels in Oxford by managing the use of certain roads by private cars, and a system of permits for residents will be introduced, offering them exceptions for a certain number of journeys through the filters. All other vehicles, including emergency services, taxis, buses, coaches, all vans, mopeds, motorbikes and HGVs, can pass through traffic filters at all times. Electrical works have started near the filter points at Holloway, Hythebridge Street, St Cross Road, St Clements, Marston Ferry Road and Thames Street. And the roads have been marked red near the traffic filter locations. A camera-enforced bus gate has been operating High Street for many years. Traders and residents in West Oxford have criticised the Network Rail delays.
Politicians have raised concerns Oxford University is dominating the map of the city in a new form of town and gown division as major campus developments take place. Works taking place will create new mini-districts, include Oxpens, a new Oxford quarter with student accommodation, as well as a series of university laboratories for areas such as Botley Road and Hythe Bridge Street. It comes as the development company of St John's College is also constructing Oxford North, 1 million square feet of new labs and workspace near Wolvercote, which includes cafes, bars, a hotel, a nursery and green space. Labour City Council leader Susan Brown has responded to criticism of this campus-style development, suggesting it is misdirected and shows a fundamental misunderstanding of the planning system and the powers of the council. This was after independent Temple Cowley councillor Saj Malik stated Oxford University has been dominating the map of Oxford. "It is becoming the dominant force directing which path the city will take," Mr. Malik said. "The council is pushing independent businesses out. The university wants to make Oxford a student town." The City Council also came under fire from Green Councillor Lois Muddiman of the Osney and St Thomas ward. She said, "Oxford City Council seems to be encouraging proposals for many employment sites to bring lots of new jobs to Oxford. However, we do not have an employment crisis. What we have is a housing crisis." But Labour leader Susan Brown responded, Unlike other parties, we don't pretend that the city's economy is a tide that can somehow be held back and stopped, but instead seek to manage it to make it as inclusive as possible. These comments show a fundamental misunderstanding of the planning system and the powers of the council. Labour councillors have ensured that the City Council's local plan and our housing and economic policies are delivering council housing, shared ownership housing, and improving the quality of private rented housing to address the very real housing need in our city. The City Council has not assigned any new sites for employment use for about 10 years. Every single employment site in the city, from the car factory to the hospitals, can be used for housing if the owners of those sites want to. Equally, if the owner of a site that is already used for employment wants to carry on using that site for employment, then they can also do so. There is no ability for the council as a planning authority to prevent the owners changing the type of employment on their site, as has happened in a number of places, from retail to laboratory or office space. The City Council's role is to help make sure that when proposals for new buildings on existing employment sites come forward, those buildings are of the highest possible environmental standards, that they are well connected for pedestrians and cyclists, and that car parking is kept to a minimum. The Oxpens site, a multi-million pound plan for new apartments, student rooms, a hotel and an amphitheatre, is a joint venture between Nuffield College and Oxford City Council at an underused 15-acre brownfield site into an extension of the city centre. Some householders in Oxford have raised concern, saying the council should be pushing to prioritise affordable housing in the site rather than employment use. Miss Muddyman said the council's part in Oxpens was an example of where the council had the power to change things when we went back to her with Miss Brown's comment on a fundamental misunderstanding of the planning system. Dr. Hosne Jafari Marbini, Oxford Community Independence Councillor for Northfield Brook and Chair of the Child Poverty Review Group, said, "Whilst well-paid jobs are important for lifting local people out of hardship, it's clear that trickle-down economics doesn't work. Our workers are paying almost two-thirds of their salary on rent. The division between town and guide is sadly, between town and gown is sadly persistent, with housing prices rocketing in no small part due to university programmes. The Oxford North development is not even meeting the recommended 50% affordable housing benchmark. If the university is serious about tackling its role at the root of inequalities our residents suffer, then it's high time it acknowledges the above and puts the people of Oxford before its growth and profits." Meanwhile, traders in Oxford have also shared their thoughts on changes in the city. Graham MacDonald, founder of the ice cream gelataria in the covered market, suggested he thought the university contributed a lot to the economy. He added, "The university is one of the major draws to the city centre, both for academia but also for tourists. Anything that enhances that has got to be a good thing." But Amir Steve Ali, who works at the Rice Box restaurant on Cowley Road, said, the city council, should really focus on the local residents as well, because there's a housing crisis. People are struggling. There's a long waiting list. To me, it looks like this is all about money. Us local people should be the priority. Everyone is welcome, but obviously sort out the mess in Oxford first. Independent Oxford Alliance councillor David Henwood said, "It is really important that both the universities work with us and we work with the universities to get an outcome that's right for Oxford. It shouldn't be a one-way conversation." But he identified science and technology as one of the sectors giving significant growth and said anything that improves growth in Oxford, we would be willing to support.
A new Oxfordshire MP has given a behind-the-scenes look at his first weeks in Westminster. Liberal Democrat MP Ollie Glover was elected MP for Didcot and Wantage in the early hours of Friday, July the 5th, during the general election count at Abingdon's White Horse Leisure and Tennis Centre, beating previous incumbent David Johnston by a majority of 6,233. Mr Glover became one of five Liberal Democrat MPs in the county. After completing his first 2 weeks in the role with visits to Westminster, London, Mr Glover spoke to us about how he is getting on. "This time has been dominated by essential training and briefing," he said. "Parliament has sought to learn from past scandals over expenses and poor behaviour. As a result, new MPs are taken through compulsory sessions on appropriate use of public money, behavioural conduct and the workings of Parliament. There has also been the more basic challenge of learning to navigate the parliamentary estate. There are several buildings all connected and the main Parliament building has been altered many times over the decades. I can now find everywhere I need, though I suspect I still not go by the most efficient route." Mr Glover was also sworn in during his first days at Westminster, which left the Oxfordshire politician positively taken aback by the modern take on long-standing traditions. "There is much about Parliament that remains deep-seated in tradition and ritual, but one sign of modernisation really touched me," he added. "When taking the oath of office, I saw the table which contains all the options by which MPs can show their commitment. All kinds of religious texts are available. MPs can swear or affirm their allegiance to the King in English, Cornish, Gaelic and other languages of the British Isles. This recognition of the diversity of the membership of our modern Parliament is very much to be welcomed." The mild-mannered politician won over voters with his takes on the local area, as well as his favourite flavour of crisps and fondness for Kylie Minogue. "My favourite crisps are definitely salt and vinegar, as I like the intensity of the vinegar flavour," he said prior to the election. "As for music, I got the opportunity to go to a Kylie Minogue concert at Earl's Court in 2005, and that was really something."
An Oxford surgeon who has worked in hospitals in Gaza has said healthcare professionals who have seen the horrific injuries inflicted on Palestinians must speak up. Professor Nick Maynard also warned Palestinian deaths from malnourishment and lack of healthcare could dwarf those injured in Israeli strikes. He said he wants to meet with UK and Irish politicians to speak about traumatic injuries suffered by Gazans. The 61-year-old consultant gastrointestinal surgeon at Oxford University Hospitals Trust has travelled to the Palestinian enclave regularly since 2010 with medical aid for Palestinians to provide medical training. Since Israel's military operation was launched in the Gaza Strip in response to the October the 7th attack by Hamas militants, he has travelled there twice to treat what he called indescribably awful injuries. He said while working there in January, he emerged from a theatre room in the Al-Aqsa Hospital after operating on a young woman for 5 hours to find a hole in the wall of the intensive care unit after a missile strike. Professor Maynard said no one was injured in the strike, but they had been told the hospital was in a de-conflicted zone. He describes the scenes in Gaza hospitals as chaotic, and that the vast majority of patients are women and children. The surgeon said he can still remember the screams of an orphaned Palestinian girl whose leg was severely broken and needed to be reset without any pain relief. He added, "I'll never forget one child whose face was burned so badly that you could see the facial bones through the burnt flesh. She had no chance of survival and she died a very slow death. We saw large numbers of traumatic amputations, children coming in with one, two, sometimes three limbs amputated by the bombs." Professor Maynard said he wants to meet with Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer, Foreign Secretary David Lammy, and any Irish politicians so he can show them images of the types of traumatic scenes he has witnessed. "If I could meet Lammy and Starmer, I would," he said. "Do I believe it'll make any difference? I've no idea, but if I had the opportunity, I would do that. I'd love to meet Irish politicians if I had the opportunity to do so. In reality, it's only the US government who can stop them, Israel. But the Irish government, the UK government, could put pressure on the US government. I'm quite sure of that. He said Gaza had been failed by academic and medical institutions in the UK and called for them to allow vigils to be held in hospitals to remember healthcare staff who had been killed in Gaza. He said a young Palestinian doctor that he knew, Mai Sara, who had received a scholarship in the UK, was killed in Gaza when his family home was bombed, with his parents and his sister also killed. I think the medical institutions, the academic institutions, should provide far more support to their employees and their students who are protesting and standing up for the Gazans, Professor Maynard said. He said during his recent visit several months ago, what stood out to him was how malnourishment caused by Israel limiting food into the region is causing excess deaths. What are thunderbugs? How to get rid of the tiny black insects in your house. Although summer is great for enjoying picnics in the park and balmy evenings in pub gardens, it does mean the arrival of dreaded bugs everywhere. The warmer months of the year are a heaven for the likes of wasps, flying ants and ticks. However, have you recently seen dozens of minuscule black bugs crawling around your clothes, windowsills and almost every other surface in your house? Some people have even claimed to find them stuck inside their laptop screens and facial beards on one Reddit forum. You might have even found yourself feeling rather itchy watching them flutter around your bedroom or kitchen. So, what are they? Known as thunderbugs, or thunderflies, or thrips, these irritating and tiny black creatures can be as small as 1 millimetre. Let's find out how to get rid of them in your house. They are known by so many different names. Thunderfly, thunderblight, thrip and stormfly, reports goodgarden.co.uk. Why are they associated with storm and thunder? Because they usually come up just before a thunderstorm arrives, when the air is hot and dry. Thrips fly in large swarms and multiply rapidly in summertime. They can ruin your garden in various ways. For example, they cut slits in your plants and deposit their eggs there. Then these little eggs feed on the plant for 7 to 14 days. Leave silver and black dots on the leaves of your plants. Turn the petals of your flowers brown. Transmit viruses to weak and young plants, such as tomato spotted wilt virus. How to get rid of thunderbugs in the house. If thunderbugs are taking over your house this summer, there are various ways to get rid of them or prevent them from coming in. 1. Don't wear bright colours. If thunderflies are landing on you, it's likely because you are wearing bright clothing, explains the CEO of Lawn Love, Jeremy Yamaguchi. He told Real Homes, these insects are attracted to bright colours, which is why they also destroy bright flowers in your yard. Try to wear something lighter if they're bothering you. 2. Herbs. Thunderbugs have a strong sense of smell, so putting herbs such as lavender, rosemary and thyme around the house can keep them away.
The founder of Blue Zones, Dan Butner, has shared 10 ingredients that could help you live longer, lose weight and feel better. The National Geographic fellow and author, 64, recently took to his Instagram platform to explain the benefits of the purest form of the Mediterranean diet. In recent years, Butner has become well known for his studies into the world's blue zones, areas of our planet where people typically lead longer lives. The explorer and educator researches every possible aspect of these regions, from diets and exercise to the impact of religion and our relationships. One of these zones is the Greek island of Ikaria in the Aegean Sea. Speaking to his followers in front of a table filled with popular Icarian ingredients, Butner explained that the 10 foods represent 1,000 years of culinary genius. This is the traditional Icarian diet. Most of the ingredients have been around for 60, 70, 100 years. You can take every one of these ingredients in every one of these dishes and trace it back to the evidence showing why it helps you live longer and lose weight and feel better. The author also praises how inexpensive the ingredients are as well, and that you can eat them your whole life. So, what are these ingredients? Let's take a look. Butner starts with one of his most recommended foods, beans. In his social media post, he explains that beans, particularly chickpeas and black-eyed peas, are eaten like a snack or added to soups and stews. He admits that chickpeas may be high in fat, but nearly all of it is unsaturated. The second food found in the Icarian diet that Butner suggests, added to our own, is fennel. From bulb to seeds, the explorer says that fennel is packed with nutrients, including calcium, iron, manganese, and potassium. Icarians use it in their cooking as well as in herbal teas. Butner also suggests adding wild greens into our routines through the likes of purslane, dandelion, and arugula. The expert explains that they are a great source of minerals as well as carotenoids. Carotenoids are the colourful pigments that the body converts to vitamin A. Lemons are also eaten whole, the skin and all, in Icaria. The lemon peel may have a beneficial impact on blood glucose, which helps to control or prevent diabetes. Butner also pointed his followers towards olive oil, which he says Icarians eat at least 4 tablespoons worth a day. The explorer notes that olive oil may protect against heart disease, before adding that it's also why one study suggests Icarians have a 50% lower mortality rate. Other ingredients in the Icarian diet with longevity benefits include the herbs oregano, rosemary, and sage. Butner explained, "Oregano is one of the many herbs used in Icarian cooking. It's rich in antioxidants and compounds proved to help fight bacteria." Talking about sage, the expert says having the herb in their diets could be one of the reasons Icarians have lower rates of Alzheimer's and dementia. Sage is also said to have properties that help strengthen bones. Meanwhile, rosemary is shown to improve digestion and enhance memory, and is used quite often in herbal teas throughout Icaria. Additionally, Butner says that potatoes are eaten daily in Icaria. This isn't the case in other Mediterranean diets.
Hundreds of thousands of lives could be saved this decade thanks to a new malaria vaccine, an Oxford Jab development team boss has said. Sir Adrian Hill, Professor of Vaccinology at the University of Oxford, said he hoped the vaccine, the second of its kind, would pave the way for a really serious attempt at eradicating the disease. The vaccine, which has been hailed as a scientific breakthrough, is the first malaria vaccine to meet the World Health Organization's target of 75% efficacy at preventing the disease. The first doses, which were rolled out in the Ivory Coast this week, were developed under Sir Adrian at the university's Jenner Institute. Speaking to the BBC Radio 4 Today programme, Sir Adrian said, "I think during this decade, we can dock 500,000 deaths a year, right down to maybe 200,000 if things go well. And then ultimately, probably in the next decade, will be a really serious attempt at eliminating and eradicating malaria." Named R21/Matrix-M, Sir Adrian described the vaccine as the best vaccine we now have. He said, "It's less expensive, it's more available, and it works better. This is a vaccine that was designed and developed in 2012 and has been progressing since then. He said the vaccine is at a price point where it's realistic to roll this out in many tens of millions of doses from now on. The vaccine is given to children typically of 5, 6 and 7 months of age, 4 weeks apart, followed by a booster a year later. It primes the blood with antibodies that target the malaria protein, known as circumspectzerite. Sir Adrian said the low cost made the jab ideal for lower income countries. He said, instead of this being a $9 or $10 cost, as with the original vaccine per dose, this is just under $4 per dose, and that makes a real difference in low-income countries. That's why the development is really important, because everyone sees this as an affordable vaccine. Malaria is a life-threatening disease spread to humans by some types of mosquitoes. It's mostly found in tropical countries. It's preventable and curable. The infection is caused by a parasite and does not spread from person to person. Symptoms can be mild or life-threatening. NHS advice states that if you're travelling to an area where malaria is found, you should get advice from a GP, nurse, pharmacist or travel clinic before you go.
A major health warning has been issued over a spike in cases of slapped cheek syndrome, a viral infection common in children that can cause serious complications for unborn babies. Oxford University Hospitals Trust said there had been an increase in cases of infection by the parvovirus in Oxfordshire and across Europe. Groups at increased risk for complications should seek prompt medical attention if they develop symptoms. In children, the virus can cause a relatively harmless infection with symptoms including a high temperature, a runny nose and sore throat, a headache and a red rash, which should clear up within 3 weeks. It can be passed on to adults who might also experience joint pain and stiffness, which can continue for many weeks. To ease the symptoms, experts say you should rest, drink plenty of fluids to avoid dehydration, and take paracetamol or ibuprofen if uncomfortable. But parvovirus can cause anemia for unborn babies, which can be fatal for the baby, and as the mother may have no symptoms, it is possible this could go undetected. Pregnant women who have been exposed to parvovirus should contact their GP to discuss a blood test. As a general precaution, they should also avoid facial contact with people who have the virus, wash their hands often with water and soap, and avoid sharing personal items such as towels. If a pregnant woman tests positive for parvovirus, the baby's health can be monitored and, if necessary, treated with an intrauterine fetal transfusion. Christos Ioannou, consultant in obstetrics and fetal medicine at OUH, said, "In many cases, parvovirus is quite minor and will go away on its own. However, due to the risk to unborn babies and the increase in cases across the continent, we want people to be aware of what to do to manage it. Pregnant women who think they have been exposed to parvovirus should contact their GP or maternity care team in the first instance. They can then take steps to get tested and, if necessary, put a treatment plan in place. Other people who should contact their GP if exposed to parvovirus include people with blood disorders such as sickle cell disease or thalassemia, people with weakened immune systems, for example because of chemotherapy, leukemia, HIV or diabetes. OUH is one of the largest NHS teaching trusts in England. On October 1st, 2015, the trust was awarded Foundation Trust status and became Oxford University Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust. It is governed by a board of directors, day-to-day running of the hospitals and their clinical and non-clinical services is delegated to executive directors and senior clinicians and managers.
Three leisure centres in Oxford are set to undergo upgrades and receive a range of new equipment this summer. Barton Leisure Centre, Ferry Leisure Centre and the Lees Pools and Leisure Centre will receive the cardio and strength equipment as part of a summer upgrade planned by the More Leisure Community Trust, MLCT, the facilities operator. The new e-gym machines will be introduced at the Ferry and Lees centres. These appliances provide personalised workouts tailored to individual needs. There will also be modernised facilities, including new spin bikes, an improved studio layout at Lees and improvements to the changing facilities at Ferry. In addition to the machines, all three centres will see their fitness studios refurbished with the latest technology, and the cafes at the Ferry and Lees centres will also reopen. The improvements come as part of a £3 million loan from the council, which will see a significant return over the course of the 10-year contract. The profits will then be funneled back into other essential services across the city. Chui Munkonge, Cabinet Member for a Healthy Oxford, said, "This investment in our leisure centres reflects our commitment to the health and well-being of Oxford residents, and we are excited about the positive impact these upgrades will have on our community. By working closely with More Leisure, we are confident that these refurbished facilities will set a new standard for leisure centres in the region. Whether you are a regular gym goer or new to fitness, these upgrades will offer something for everyone. Don't forget as well, if you live in Oxford and you're under 16, you can get a pass to swim for free." Jamie Townsend, National Health and Fitness Manager for Serco Leisure, added, "The customers at Barton Leisure Centre, Ferry Leisure Centre and the Lees Pools and Leisure Centre are going to love their new gyms. I'm especially excited about the e-gym kit coming to two of the facilities. These machines are at the cutting edge of tech within the fitness sector, providing bespoke, personalised workouts. All work to install the new gym equipment is expected to be complete by September." Mr. Townsend added, "For details of any closure periods while work takes place, please keep an eye on your centre's website and social media pages. These changes aren't the end of our range of improvement work across each of the five centres in Oxford, so keep your eyes peeled for even more good news later in the year."
Introducing the Oxford United Supporters Panel for 2024-25. Don't hesitate to get in touch with us at matches or by email on ouspinfo@gmail.com. Paul Scaisbrook. Paul has supported Oxford United since 1980. He is a wheelchair user, having been disabled since birth, with a season ticket in the North Stand. Paul aims to ensure that all aspects of disability are considered by the club, both now and in the plans for the new stadium, so that all disabled supporters have the opportunity to experience football as any other supporter would. Andy Holding, born in Oxford and now living in Wantage. Andy has been a fan of Oxford United since the Milk Cup win in 1986. Nowadays you'll find him in the East or South Stand. Andy is eager to improve the fan experience in all areas and is especially keen to promote carpooling to and from matches to reduce travel costs for fans, as well as congestion and parking issues around the stadium. Matthew O'Donoghue. Matthew attends home games in the East Stand and many away matches and is especially interested in fans' sense of belonging. Matthew aims to work with fellow panel members, the club's management, and our passionate fans to chart a path towards an even brighter future for Oxford United. He wants to ensure that fans' thoughts, ideas and concerns are given the attention they deserve. Ohad Green. Oxford United has become an integral part of Ohad's life since he arrived in Oxford from abroad 7 years ago. A relative newcomer to the city, he recognises that Oxford United is more than a football club. It is something that connects his family to the city and gives him a reason to stay here. Ohad often attends matches with his daughter, and this season they are graduating from the North Stand to the East. Grace Bailey. Grace is proud to be the Her Game 2 ambassador for Oxford United, working to raise awareness of the campaign and make the club more welcoming to women. Grace is recovering well from long-term health issues and knows how important it is for football to be accessible to all, including those with hidden disabilities. Grace can usually be found in and around the South Stand blower. Pete Chilton. Pete is passionate and enthusiastic, with a genuine desire to make things better for everyone. He particularly wants to represent the older generation of supporters, those who have followed the club for a long time and may not always be fully engaged with the modern methods of communication such as social media. You'll find Pete in the East Stand. Janine Bailey. Janine's first job was selling 50-50 tickets in Beach Road and the Manor Club. She has been on OUSP for the last 3 years, working hard to get fans' views heard by the club and our wider community. She believes that good communication between the club and our supporters is really important and is keen to further improve this area. You will find Janine in South Lower. Pete Green. A long-time supporter, Pete, juggles supporting United around work and family life. He has been part of the team of matchday volunteers working to make the experience a special one. He hopes to continue to build links with our current fan base whilst looking to attract even more into the Oxford United family here and hopefully into our new stadium.
Oxford United have announced the possibility of running further special bus services with the new championship season approaching. In conjunction with the Oxford Bus Company, two buses will operate on both the OX2 and OX3 routes for all league games, with one bus on the OX7 route. The OX2 will run from and back to Didcot, the OX3 from and to Cotterton, and the OX7 from and to Kidlington. The club is exploring the possibility of running further buses from Bicester and Tame, should the demand exist. The Bicester bus would start from Pioneer Square, picking up at the Retail Park, Bristol Road on Glory Farm, Bicester North Railway Station, Bicester Village, and Kingsmere Park and Ride. The Tame bus would start from the Town Hall, picking up at the Fox in Tiddington, Ambrose Rise in Wheatley, and Thornhill Park and Ride. The club is also looking for volunteers to assist on the proposed bus services. Until further notice, the government is continuing to fund a cap of £2 on all adult single bus tickets to support families through the cost of living pressures. This offer includes a cap on return tickets. Therefore, a return ticket to the Kassam Stadium is no more than £4. Those with return tickets will have priority over those supporters simply wishing to use the bus on the return journey. Luke Marion, Oxford Bus Company and Thames Travel Managing Director, previously said, "The football special services are an important community asset and help supporters to attend matches and support their local clubs safely while helping to reduce congestion and carbon emissions. Supporters will be able to benefit from cheaper fares this season via the government's national fare cap scheme, which makes the football specials even better value for money. It comes as the club has officially ruled out building a fourth stand at the Kassam Stadium for the time being, with higher attendances expected in the championship. The club's promotion to the Sky Bet Championship led to suggestions that the U's could erect a fourth stand at Noble Road in order to get the most out of playing second-tier football. A visit from Norwich City on August 10th is set to be United's first game in the second tier of English football for 25 years. After that opening day fixture, which currently has a 12:30 kick-off like the rest of the Championship. The U's round off the month with trips to Coventry City and Blackburn Rovers and a home clash with Preston North End. To register interest in using the proposed service or to volunteer, go to surveymonkey.com/r/footballbusses special.
Cameron Branigan is targeting the Premier League after penning a new long-term contract at Oxford United. The 28-year-old midfielder's previous deal was due to expire next summer, but his future has now been secured ahead of the Sky Bet Championship season. Speaking directly after United's playoff final victory at Wembley, Branigan said the U's should look to the example of Ipswich Town, who finished second in League One during the 2022-23 campaign, and back that up with a second-place finish in the Championship, securing a place in the Premier League. Branigan maintains that drive as the beginning of the Championship season edges closer. After signing a new contract with United, he said, "I'm over the moon, to be quite honest. I've been here now for a long, long time. It seems that way, anyway. I've loved every minute of it, and last season was a special one. We want to push on now and do well this season. It's a massive season for everybody at the club. It's something I'm really pleased to be part of and that I'm massively looking forward to." Branigan came through the academy at Liverpool and played 9 games for the first team. He had a loan spell with Fleetwood Town in the second half of the 2016-17 season and joined the U's for an undisclosed fee in January 2018. "Me being dead honest, I didn't expect to be here this long. It's crazy because I've loved every single minute of my time here," said Branigan. "The first season I was here, I missed home quite a bit, which led me to thinking that I might move back. I love it here. I love the place, I love the people, and I love playing for Oxford United. There's only one place I want to be, and it's here. I'm over the moon to get this deal done. It's a massive season for me personally and for the club, and something I really cannot wait for." He added, "My motive has been to try and get the club to the Championship, as a collective, as a team, as a club, and as a fan base. We did that, and I know a lot of people are saying about trying to stay up, but I want to try and go to the Premier League, as mad as that sounds. That's the new aim now." Branigan's importance to United was fully underlined last season when he grabbed 13 goals in 51 games as the U's won promotion from League One. In total, he has netted 54 goals in 290 matches for United.
An accessible boat club has benefited from a Tea Party fundraiser which amassed hundreds of pounds. Wallingford Accessible Boat Club, WABC, was the beneficiary of the event, hosted on Saturday, July the 20th, by Benson House Care Home. The charity enables disabled and less mobile people to get out and about on the River Thames. The event included award presentations, a draw for a bottle of bubbly, the sale of the club's grand summer raffle tickets, and an assortment of tea and cakes. Jim McLeod, customer relations manager for Benson House Care Home, organised the event and said, "WABC is a wonderful organisation and our residents just love getting out on the river here at Benson in the club's wheelie boat. What is truly amazing is that they do not charge for their service, so we wanted to do something for them. Through raffles and donations from the home's residents, their families and friends, and Benson House, they raised £282. John Jenkins, chairman of WABC, said, "We are so very thankful to Benson House. Our volunteers love taking their staff and residents out on the river. They all get so much enjoyment from their trips. We had a lovely afternoon and were delighted that London Marathon runner Abby Turner could join us to give a talk about her recent experience. Miss Turner was presented with the WABC Community Champion Award for raising £2,542 for the club."
St Hilda's College welcomes back the annual Crime Fiction Weekend. This much-anticipated event, held from August the 9th to August the 11th, is set to engross crime fiction enthusiasts with a packed programme of talks, panels and activities. This year's theme, A Dance to the Music of Crime, The Artful Path to Murder, dissects the integral role music and performance play in popular stories ranging from Sherlock Holmes to modern musical sensations like the fun-loving crime writers. The guest of honour for this literary event, Ellie Griffiths, is celebrated for her Dr. Ruth Galloway series and the Brighton Mystery series. Her standalone, The Stranger Diaries, won an Edgar Award, highlighting her remarkable influence in the genre. She was awarded the CWA's coveted Dagger in the Library in 2016. The event will include keynote speeches from acclaimed authors, insightful panel discussions on crime writing aspects such as plotting and character development, and engaging interactive sessions including Q&A and book signings. Attendees will also enjoy exclusive previews of upcoming releases, offering direct insights from authors about their inspiration and creative processes.
A charity supporting families across Oxfordshire has announced a summer lineup of free events. Home Start Oxford will be running the events throughout August in the Witney and Rose Hill areas. Although the sessions are designed for families with children up to the age of five, older siblings are also welcome to attend. At Oxley's Play Park in Witney, events are planned to run weekly on Wednesdays from 10 a.m. to midday. Meanwhile in Rose Hill, sessions will take place on certain Fridays at the Rose Hill Community Centre from 10 a.m. to midday. There will be a different theme for each session, ensuring a variety of experiences for the children involved. Jan Cristal, Home Start Oxford's family coordinator, said, "We're delighted to be able to offer so many fun sessions again this year. It's always difficult for young families to find things to do over the summer that don't cost lots of money. We want parents, grandparents and carers to come and have some fun with their children and not to have to worry about the cost. We're really looking forward to seeing everyone." A full list of Home Start Oxford's Family Fun Days can be found on its website. The charity provides non-judgmental free support to families in the Oxford and West Oxfordshire area who have at least one child under the age of five.
At the end of last week and over the weekend, Thursday to Sunday, the Truck Festival took place at Steventon. These next two articles appeared in separate copies of the Oxford Mail, telling people about the festival itself and what to bring and what not to bring. The summer skies are clearing just in time as the countdown begins for Oxfordshire's best and biggest celebration of new rock and pop, the Truck Festival. Carved out of a site on Hill Farm in Steventon near Didcot, from July 25th to 28th, the festival has been a fixture for music lovers since 1998. Started by musician brothers Robin and Joe Bennett of the bands Gold Rush and the Dreaming Spires as a birthday bash for Robin, it has a proud history of pushing back against the commercialism of larger festivals and instead focusing on the music and upcoming talent. Robin and Joe have long since passed the baton, allowing them to focus on, among other things, their eco-friendly wood festival near Wallingford. But Truck Spirit lives on. Truck Festival manager Lily Brimble describes it as a celebration of new alternative music, fun, and a place not to take yourself too seriously. Bands and artists include Jamie T, Wet Leg, The Streets, Katie B, Sophie Ellis-Bextor, Declan McKenna, Soft Play, The Cooks, Yard Act, The Snuts, Sea Curls, and Oxfordshire's own Willie J. Healy, among scores more. Along with a lineup of music and comedy, Truck is upping its game once again this year by creating a new family campsite with extra special entertainment for the little truckers out there. It's lovely to see people who've been coming for years bringing along their brood, says Lily. Truck is proud of its charitable roots and progressive ethos, which continues. Look out for each other, respect each other, look after our home and go at your own pace, says Lily. Community is what makes Truck Festival stand out, and during your visit you can help give back by visiting the Truck Festival Feel Good Food Hall. This eatery is home to more than 150 volunteers, cooking up delicious grub for festival goers all weekend. The truck team especially recommend the mac and cheese. Volunteers include members of Didcot Rotary Club, of which farm owner Alan Binning is a member and staunch charity supporter. Almost £130,000 was raised last year, and Truck has donated 38 grants of up to £25,000 to county community projects such as breastfeeding cafes and Oxfordshire Fair Foster Care Association. With the festival at the last weekend of the month and the Thursday and Friday before, work is underway at getting Hill Farm ready for the thousands of music lovers. And Lily can't wait for the gates to open. She says, we've made some tweaks to the arena, but all the things that make Truck so special and fun remain the same. With the lineup featuring some of the county's biggest and best new artists, Truck Festival is a rock lover's dream, but there's more to it than just indie bands, with its impressive lineup also boasting stars and rising talent from the worlds of pop, punk, electronica, dance, drum and bass, and hip hop, along with hit singer-songers and plenty of surprises. So, what to bring? Tickets, which the festival asks you to download in advance, so it is available offline, photo ID and a phone are all top of the list of items to bring. According to the website, all bars and vendors will be completely cashless, so remember to take a card to pay. Checking the forecast in advance is recommended to ensure visitors bring suitable clothing. As it stands, the Met Office predicts the weather on Friday and Saturday to be 21 degrees centigrade. There will be water taps across the festival site, so taking a reusable water bottle is recommended to stay hydrated, but they must be empty when entering the festival. Baby wipes, loo roll and basic toiletries such as a towel, soap, deodorant and toothpaste are all recommended. Sealed prescription medication will also be allowed in at the gates. Although the festival promises to cater for all dietary requirements, the website recommends to bring extra snacks, which are allowed in the campsite but not in the arena. And lastly, fancy dress. This year's theme, being sporting heroes. And what not to bring? Aerosols over 250 grams, including deodorants, antiperspirants, hairspray, dry shampoo, suntan lotion or skin moisturiser are not allowed. Also on the list is excessive amounts of alcohol. And it's important to note that it will only be permitted on first entry to the campsite, meaning visitors will not be able to exit and re-enter with more alcohol. However, there will be bars selling alcohol at the festival and cocktail bars. Animals are not allowed, with only registered assistance dogs permitted entry to the festival. Air horns, drones and the unmanned aerial vehicles are included on the list, as well as disposable barbecues. Professional cameras are also not permitted, which is deemed to be any camera with a removable lens or a zoom three times or greater. The list of banned items is extensive and you can read the list in full on the Truck Festival website. Those attending the festival should also note there is planned engineering works which will affect National Rail Service across the weekend, affecting train services between Oxford, Banbury and Didcot Parkway. Replacement buses will be available across the affected dates. Thames Travel will also be running a shuttle bus service to and from Didcot Parkway.
Cowley Road Carnival 2024 is preparing for a triumphant return after 5 years away. Trustees of Cowley Road Works made the announcement in March that the event, which has not taken place since 2019, will be back on Sunday, September the 1st. All groups interested in participating in the procession are invited to get in touch with organisers via the event website. The deadline for entries has been extended to July the 29th. Board member Alex Singleton said, "I cannot stop smiling, knowing we will be doing what we did last in 2019. As a local artist and parent, I am so honoured to be part of this exciting rebirth." Exciting Programmes and Activities Artistic Director and CEO Pax Nindle added, "The community needs to be ready for all this excitement. For example, next week we will be announcing our Mass Camp programme, taking place in August, where the community can come and make or design their own costumes based on our theme, Our Nature, Our Future. And that's not all. We still have house floats and street parties planned before the carnival. We appreciate your support and encourage you to get involved in any way you can, whether it's participating in the procession, attending our pre-carnival events, or simply spreading the word. Your involvement is crucial to the success of the carnival." Cowley Road Carnival relies on funding, sponsorship, stalls and sales, and in the past has been funded or sponsored by the Arts Council, BMW Mini, Brooks University, Global Carnivals, Oxford City Council, and its partners. The carnival is still looking for sponsors and support. Please contact director at cowleyroadworks.org.
Memory Lane this week features Memories for Families Living at Slade Park Camp. Carol Burke is one of the Oxford Mail's readers who responded to the paper's request for memories of living at Slade Park, the former army camp in Shotover in Headington. She spent 4 years there with her parents, Joan and Evan Hopkins, living in one of the wooden huts at Headington, which had housed soldiers during the Second World War. She wrote, "Mum, Dad and I moved from my grandparents' house to 12 First Avenue in 1952 when I was 9. The hut was newly painted inside and smelt fresh and clean. We had 2 bedrooms, a bathroom and toilet, kitchen and living room, with a stove which burned coal. It was cosy and warm in winter. I quickly got used to living there and found it a happy place to be, surrounded by open land and woods with easy access to Shotover. The huts were spaced nicely and each had a garden, back, front and side. I could go to the end of our garden, climb up a little grassy bank, hop across a stream and be in Brasenose Wood. In spring, the wood was dotted with celandines, wood anemones, bluebells and trees full of birdsong. All the children were friendly and we got along well. In winter, we made slides of sheer ice and lined up one at a time, running and sliding. We played in deep snow, popping indoors every so often to warm our feet and hands before going out again. In the school summer holidays, we would take a sandwich and spend many hours on Shotover, where there was a sandy area with a spring or water tap, where we made streams and dams or just ran around in freedom. There were ferns and wild flowers and all the countryside smells. Horses and riders would trot by. The army parade ground was still there, and we would walk across it daily to catch a bus in Holloway, to school in Temple Road, St Christopher's and then Temple Cowley School when I was older. When my parents bought me a bike, I was able to cycle fast down First Avenue and then whiz across the parade ground. Once, after going to Shotover, we walked home through the woods on a dark, wet evening. Dad had a torch and we had to step carefully as the path through the wood was covered by toads and frogs crossing and hopping around. The family lived at Slade Camp for nearly 4 years and then moved to Rose Hill. The site was off Horse Path Driftway, the Slade and the now Eastern Bypass. When hostilities ended and the soldiers moved out, the huts they lived in were used to house city families. Mrs. Burke of Hazeldene Close, Ensham, whose father was a carpenter after leaving the RAF, told me, It was so rural, and I was a perfectly happy child there. I'm now 81 and look back at that time with thankfulness for childhood friendships, the freedom to roam and play, and the closeness to nature. Guided tours of Slade Camp will be offered to visitors during Oxford's Open Doors Day from 12:30 to 4 p.m. on Sunday, September the 15th.
A primary school teacher has crocheted her class of 30 children as an end-of-year gift. Sarah Shabir, a teacher at an East Oxford primary school, started the project in May and unveiled it as she said goodbye to her class on July the 24th. The mini work of art took her about 8 hours per doll and about 240 hours altogether. She said, "The idea came from me just wanting to do something special and exciting for my class, whom I adore. I learned to crochet, self-taught, during the COVID lockdown and have been creating things since then. So I wanted to push myself and make these dolls to build my own skills as a crocheter. I enjoy giving myself little projects to work on." Miss Shabir has this year taught 7 and 8-year-olds in year 3. She said, "They loved their mini-me's."
That was everything for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Oxtalk, you can telephone Margaret on 07496-062280. That is 07496-062280. Please remember to leave your name and contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from previous weeks are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. You can also listen on an Alexa device through the Talking Newspaper skill. If you need advice on this, please phone the main Oxtalk number. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next Tuesday with more news, so until then, we hope you have a good week.